Meow. Meow, meow, meow. This is the Freedom Fiends. Radio is dying, but we'll ride it down to the ground, hooping and hollering with our hat waving. Like Slim Pickens at the end of Dr. Strangelove, we'll show those dirty commies like Obama what we're made of. In a display of primo pulchritude and rejuvenative radio waves, this warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit. Yes, we've raised the temperature since last week. To keep a sin flood of statism out of your head, can you feel it? Is it working, Randy? Can you feel it? Can you feel it?
We're not circling the drain yet, and I still feel it.
Yeah, I actually wrote that out last night as my new intro for now, and I almost said, can you feel it, Megan? Is it working? Because I actually wrote that out, and I forgot to change it to a blank for fill in the host here. And Nick is here, too, but he was really late. Are you there, Nick?
I'm here.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
You're getting benched for the first segment because you were late. That's how we work here. In the radio teaching hospital. I told Nick to get on at 5 of, he got on at 5 after, and we were worried. And I was basically going to say, if there are any other Freedom Fiends out there that want to talk about Better Call Saul who've seen it, because Nick is, Nick's Amish, and he's not allowed to watch TV, right, right, Nick?
I'm not Amish, but Mennonite.
Are you?
Close enough.
You're Mennonite?
I'm not, but my parents are.
Wow, I didn't know that. I was kidding. But
me neither. I didn't know that. But yeah. He was pretty close to the mark, wasn't
That's
he?
That's really interesting. We got it all covered here. All we need is a Buddhist, and we pretty much got it all. You know, maybe we could airlift one of those monks out of Myanmar who's protesting. We were listening to a news piece, Randy and I were at the beginning, about protesters in Myanmar, which is what they used to call Burma. They changed the name because that country had such bad human rights rap around the world. That they literally changed the name and like, you know how when they rebrand a product, you know how like, I don't know, Blackwater changed their name to Z or whatever, or, you know, New Coke to Old Coke, no, Old Coke to New Coke, whatever. They thought that they could actually change the name of the country and nobody would know that they were the country that shoots monks for peacefully protesting in the street. Do you remember that, Randy?
I do remember it. Hey, Nick, I was going to ask you.
Yeah, you can talk to Nick. Though, he just can't talk to me.
He can't answer.
I'll pass
my
messages
question.
To you, to Nick.
Well, Nick, you're still going to have to serve as our expert on Mennonites since you must know more than any of the rest of us.
Do you? Or are you one of those people like, I don't know, that's my parents. I don't do that. Nick.
I know a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. I know some stuff.
Hey, my favorite stores to go into, I don't know how it is in most places, but we have a lot of Amish in Missouri, and we have a fair amount number of Mennonites, and the Mennonites tend to have these little Dutch pantry or little Dutch bakery stores where they have all the coolest stuff to buy, and I'd want to stop at any of them that I ever see.
Well, I'm going to have you guys talk about Mennonites because I'll tell you what I'm doing, and this is really cool. I had a long conversation with Derek Slopey today. The Indiegogo for Fiend Phone is over. We, split up the $1.87 that was left over after expenses, paid ourselves out. And that is more like, I don't know, it's a little more than that. Oh, I do want to read. I'm going to actually have Nick read this. I'm going to send this to Nick. Nick, go to fiendphone.com, please, and then click on the link that says team and contact. I'm going to have you read the list of people who donated because part of the perk was that their names will be read and entered into the book of life of the Fiends radio show. But we had a conversation today for a long time. It's really good, man. I really like Derek Slopey a lot. And the amount of money we raised for Fiend Phone didn't even cover anything that he did practically. You know, we raised like, I don't know, $2,500 between the two Indiegogos, and he probably has done between $15,000 and $20,000 worth of work on it. And I was satisfied with where it was. I was like, yeah, if you want to stop, you know, I'm honored that you did what you did. But he's like, no, I want to make these other improvements. So the improvements that he's going to make, he's probably going to make, I don't know, what is this, 6 or 7? He's probably going to make 4 or 5 of these 6 or 7 in the next couple months, starting pretty soon. One is adding IVP6 support, which is for the long IP addresses that are coming out, so it'll be future proof. One is adding the WSAPI support for audio in which will lower the latency in the program. One is adding a recording interface, which is pretty darn cool. One is adding automatic automatic port forwarding, so retarded people can use it. One is fixing a small issue with the passwords. One is adding encryption. Now, that kicks butt. That's going to make this a really, really killer app. And it'll be switchable off because the encryption will add a tiny bit of latency. Although net, it'll probably be less than there is now after he fixes the Wasapi thing. And then we're going to add a skin to it, you know, so it's not just a plain program. It actually has kind of a fancy interface. And we decided we're going to go with not a steampunk look, but like a ancient radio technology and computer technology look. Like, we're going to make it look like it has vacuum tubes, you know, like some piece of like radio transponding equipment from World War II or something. And then the encryption icon is actually going to be the wheels from the Enigma machine. So I'm just looking through the internet now, finding high res pictures of old timey electronics. And I'm gonna let you guys talk about Mennonites, but Nick, did you find that page of the team in contact?
Yes, I have it.
Okay.
Up.
So scroll down to where it says list of donators from the second round of Indiegogo funding. Would you please read all of those with a great deal of nobility? Like it's okay. Really like it's like you're a statist and you're reading off the name of senators or dead soldiers or something.
All right. We have Roger Veer. Jim Jesus. What was his last name?
Veer. He's the Bitcoin. Veer. He's Bitcoin Jesus. They call him. He's the guy who started mining Bitcoin when they were easy to mine and they were worth like a fraction of a penny. And he kind of got a lot of them and held on to them. And he's the guy that recently left the country. And like America's trying to get him for, he paid his taxes and they still won't let him in the country. Like, oh, you gave up your citizenship. You can't be here. You can't come visit. He's that guy.
Oh, wow.
He gave us $20.
And then after, nice.
Yep.
And then we have Terrence Gillespie.
He gave us $100.
Matthew C. Bowler.
Yep.
David Johnson.
Yep.
Sam Killen.
Anon.
Is that right?
Anonymous. Someone who
anonymous.
That did not wish to be named. Yeah, it's somebody that works, I think, in the military industrial complex and didn't want their bosses know they were helping freedom.
Are his initials Barack Obama?
No, it was not him.
No. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Brandon Phillips, Joshua Horowitz, Adam Alpau, Charles Hladley?
Hladley. Yeah, Hladdy. I double-checked that. It's not Hadley with a typo. Yep.
Oh, okay. Martin Hunzinger, M&A Online, Dennis Harima, or Hirima?
Hirima.
You got some interesting names.
I know.
I like these. The Greening Out Podcast.
Yeah.
Rick Schaub. Tim Free.
Oh, read that one again. You got a little drop out there.
Tim Fry. Yep. Oh, man. Kevin McKernan.
Yep.
Mav Feenman. Carl Lihar Mikes. Anthony Lopez. Vito Another Cup of Coffee LTD. Anders Heil Haas.
Read that one again. You got cut out.
Anders Heil Haas.
Yep.
Haas.
Okay, I'm going to read the next one because I know how to say this guy's name. It's E, letter E, Dean Sahutsky. Okay, go ahead with the rest.
Daniel R. Horrigan, Generation Y Podcast, and Appreciative Fiend, Freedom Fiends listener, and Dave Johnson.
Yep, and that's it. And I'm going to read also, again, the ones that donated over $50 on this weekend, one of the weekend shows. So that's it. We thank you all for your service. It's all wonderful. We're still accepting donations for Fiend Phone, if you want, but not through Indiegogo. But just go check it out. Go to fiendphone.com and download it. And it will not give you Ebola, and it will not give you thrush. I was talking to Randy about thrush. I have to gargle twice a day now to make sure I don't get thrush because I'm on this orally inhaled steroid-based asthma preventative medication that after you suck this weird powder down your throat, you have to rinse it all out or you get thrush, which is apparently a yeast infection on your tongue. That doesn't sound fun.
But isn't it also a bird or something?
Yeah, that's a thrush.
A bird.
Yeah, you get birds in your throat if you don't gargle.
Yeah, I think I had a kid with thrush once.
Yeah, it's a childhood malady sometimes. So we're going to talk about Better Call Saul, and Davey Barker couldn't make it. He's in Gitmo, or is it Arizona? I can't remember. I think they're the same, pretty close to the same thing. But yeah, man, I'm just feeling good. And you know, speaking of things that have ended that went well, the last ever bad Quaker podcast episode was yesterday. Do you guys know this?
I listened to
yeah.
it.
Yeah, he's retired. He did an interview with Cody Wilson. I introduced those two, and Cody was honored to be on the last show. Actually, like I really think what happened listening to it is that Ben was like, all right, I got to go before Cody was done talking. And Cody said, I want to come back sometime. And there's no more back there. So the back will probably be on the Fiends. I think we're going to do a whole weekend show with Cody. I'm going to ask him. Maybe we'll do it over Fiend phone. He's a Mac guy, but maybe he has a PC lying around. And it was good, man. What'd you think of it, Randy?
Are you talking about the Bad Quaker podcast?
Yes, the last ever.
It was a little misty there. At the very end, I loved the fact that he ended the podcast. He says goodbye and ends it with the entire song, you know, 3 minutes long or something, that is his theme music that you normally hear at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that it was a whole song written and performed by his son.
Yep.
That was kind of cool.
I think the band's called Grenades, isn't it?
I think that's what he said. No, when it was done, I was a little sad that it was done. I wrote Ben and just said it, great ending and Godspeed to you, sir. You know.
Yeah.
I hope he'll still be around.
Yeah. So if there's any other fiends out there that watch Better Call Saul, drop me an email and I'll hook you up on the Fiend phone and you can jump on and talk about Better Call Saul with us. But otherwise, we're going to talk about Better Call Saul after talking about Mennonites. Or maybe we'll talk about Mennonites later. I don't know.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
It's the Freedom Fiends, covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. So, Randy, we're going to talk about Better Call Saul, right? You up for that?
Well, we're going to have to because Nick is off trying to find out who's using the internet.
No, he's trying to find out what the ranking is in the house, what the pecking order is.
Well, yeah, if it's your little brother watching a movie or something, you can smack him on the head and stop him.
I don't think
he
has
dad. Then
and that would not
he
be
probably
that would not be peaceful parenting to whack him on the head.
No, your little brother, you're not their parent.
Well, so it does not violate the non-aggression principle to hit your little brother, or is it just boys with boys?
I think it does, but I think that it happens a lot.
Ugh.
Yeah, not with me, I was very kind to my little brothers.
I was My siblings were like in college by the time I could walk. So
they were too old to pick on
they
you.
They really were. They mostly doted over me. And it was really kind of annoying when I got past 5 years old. So yeah, I didn't like it. But fortunately. Yeah,
but what a 5-year run though.
Fortunately, they were all out, out of the house by the time I could really, by the time I went to school. All right. So we're going to talk about Better Call Saul. We have two episodes to catch up on. So what do you want to start with? I'm just looking at pictures of old timey radio. I'm going to let you talk.
Well, you know,
just go. Yeah.
You want me to talk?
All you, man.
There are two episodes. You had the March 2nd, which is now
spoiler alert
a week ago. Yeah. It was the episode Alpine Shepherd Board. You remember, yes. Remember where they got the name on that?
Yes, it was a Hummel figurine that a lady tried to pay him. Or no, she was trying to will something.
She was trying to will all her little figurines and that. That was where he said something. He did a real good job remembering where she wanted all this crazy Hummel stuff to go to. And she was so impressed and said, and here I thought all lawyers were idiots. And Jimmy says, oh no, only half of us are idiots. The other half are crooks. He said.
She liked that.
She did. She did like, yeah, she went ahead and hired him anyway.
Okay.
So even though she knew he was the crook.
First question, lawyer jokes. Do lawyers like them or not?
I don't know. Most of them don't. I don't mind them. Aren't they pretty unavoidable in this business?
What's black and brown and looks good on an attorney?
A pit bull.
A Doberman, yeah.
Okay. I was close. I wouldn't have won the Jeopardy question.
What do you call 1,000 lawyers at the bottom of the sea?
A good start.
Yep. How can you tell when a lawyer's lying?
His lips are moving.
Yeah, I've heard that about politicians, too. let's see. Do you know any more? You got any?
Not that come to mind. I'm doing good just to be able to know the punchline.
I got to say, my favorite character in this episode was Big Ricky Sipes, the wealthy tycoon who offers $1 million in cash to Saul to help him secede from the United States.
And hires him and gives him the $500,000.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, fresh, clean stacks of $100 bills until he pulls off the bundling band and sees that Ricky Sipes' face is on the money.
Yeah. So there was the sovereign citizen that didn't end up getting him free of the U.S. government. But yep. it was the thought that counts. I appreciated that. This whole episode, or the first parts of the episode were, you remember the episode before he got a whole bunch of messages after he did the stunt with the billboard and fake saved the guy's life. And so this episode, the first parts of it all start out with him visiting people,
yes,
the rich guy who wanted to have his own country. And then the lady with the Hummels, who he told the other half of the lawyers were the crooks. And of course the
guy seeking a patent for Tony, the toilet buddy, which is, the less said about that,
the talking toilet.
The less said about that, the better, I think.
Well, if you didn't get to see it, you got to go back and see it just for Tony the talking toilet.
I didn't like that at all.
Without being crude, the guy invented this toilet that helped little toddlers be potty trained. And so when they would use the toilet, when anything would drop into it, it would give these encouraging phrases. And, you know,
they all had maybe innuendo that's inappropriate for children. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm sorry, I laughed anyway.
I thought the funniest part of that was the lie that Saul told when the guy asked him if he could do patent law. And Saul said, I do so much patent law, I should just call myself a patent attorney full time. And he's actually never done any, probably.
And he can't do any because he's not a member of the patent bar.
Oh, is that a separate bar? Really?
Yes.
Wow. All right. We'll be back.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. Yeah. Okay, this is Freedom Fiends, and we're talking about Breaking Bad, the prequel to Breaking Bad called Better Call Saul. So, tell me more. You talked a lot during the break there, Randy. Repeat it all, please.
You mean, is it still my turn?
Yeah, we're still going to talk about the first episode. We're not on to the second, well, the better one from last night yet.
You know, we kind of skipped ahead to Jimmy trying to find, you know, some clients and actually found a few. But the episode started with the where it left off from the week before, where his brother, Chuck, who has the electromagnetic hypersensitivity and, you know, electricity gets to him. And he had stolen the newspaper from the neighbor. Well, had taken it and left that was, $5 behind.
I swear whoever's writing that show and Breaking Bad and probably some of the stuff on other stuff on AMC, including the zombies. The zombies are AMC, right? Yeah. Yeah. Is a libertarian. Because if they're not a libertarian, they're at least a smart liberal who understands that government is mostly horrible. Because that thing happens, you know? Somebody does something tiny or does nothing at all, you know, steals the neighbor's paper and leaves $5, and they end up getting their door kicked in, getting tased and dragged out of their house. And now, you said that was illegal, didn't you?
Well, the police, you know, they came to the door and they knocked, and Chuck won't open up because the electricity thing and all of that. And one of them goes around to the back and looks in and sees all of his fuel for Coleman stove fuel, because he doesn't have electricity. They think he's a meth cook. And they go back around to the front and they kick down the door and he falls back on the ground and they immediately tased him. Well, the tasing was ridiculous. I think the entry was completely illegal. See, they literally had probable cause to get into the house for the theft alone of the paper.
Yeah.
Which technically was a theft, pretty small thing. And they also maybe even had probable cause to get in for suspicion on the meth lab. I don't know, but let's just say that they did. That doesn't mean you can bust down the door. You have to go get a search warrant.
Yeah, and you learn a lot from AMC shows. Like, I didn't know that you could make meth using Coleman fuel. I don't know if you can or not, but apparently the police there in that show think you can. And the other thing I learned was that you can break into a Crown Vic police car with a piece of string. I didn't know that. I wonder if that's
an
true.
An older model one. Yeah. There are different recipes for making meth. And I know there is one that uses Coleman fuel as part of the process.
Is that the one called the Nazi formula? I know there's one called the Nazi formula.
You've heard got police the phosphorus talk about one. It on TV. The Nazi one uses anhydrous ammonia.
And, how do you know this from clients?
I was a prosecutor.
It was your job.
I had to know how to cook meth.
Yeah,
I
have to ask that. It's kind of funny because it's like if you're a citizen, knowing this kind of stuff is suspect. And I was treating you like the way the government treats you by being suspect of you for knowing this. I actually saw a Law and Order episode where there was a guy, the police were questioning him and he knew a lot about guns and they like, that was a red flag in the interrogation room. Like, why do you know so much about guns? And he said, oh, I was in the army. And they're like, oh, okay. It's okay. You got the information while serving the state. It's
you were
okay.
Cool. You were in the army.
Yeah. Like in New York State, it's not cool. It's suspect to know a lot about guns. It's probably true.
I've had a lot of meth cases when I was a prosecutor, but
I've had a lot of meth. Can I just take you out of context and make a loop of that? make a ringtone out of it.
Whatever sells subscriptions or whatever.
you don't even know how podcasting and radio works. Whatever sells Facebook subscriptions. Yeah. They come.
Facebook likes.
The podcast boy comes by once a week and collects a dollar from the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, well, I believe that when you start getting the checks. So never mind.
Never get a check.
But
because any money I make, I put back into the show. But go on. I mean, I'm never up
there. Well, a prosecutor has to know the process. And when I would do one, or when I did try, I specifically had instead of the meth you did try, the taste that I tried. You could put an expert on the stand and have them say, yeah, we found this and this and this, and that's and that proves that he was making meth. Well, that seems kind of lame to me. So I said, no, I'm going to put him on the stand. And we went through like just half an hour of him teaching the jury how to make meth using this particular method that the guy was using. He taught the jury how to make meth, taught them everything that was used to do it, the different things they could use. And then after they knew how to make meth, I brought on my witnesses. Ugh. And each one had them tell the things that they found, and it was a slam dunk. A slam dunk because the jury knew how to make meth, and as soon as the cop got up and said, yeah, we found this and this and this and this happening and this cooking, the jury's over there going, well, this guy was cooking meth.
You're horrible.
And so I didn't have to have an expert even to...
How do you sleep at
night? I don't know. I didn't even need an expert to tell them that the guy was making meth. They told me.
Wow.
That's the way prosecutors think.
Which is kind of weird, too, because it's you're kind of taking them at their word. And the thing is, from my understanding of what it takes to make meth, it seems like most people might have all of the ingredients at one time in their house without having any intent to make meth.
It's not likely that you would you could have pseudoephedrine, sure, for, the nasal medicine. But you're not going to have anhydrous ammonia.
No, but the other one, the Beavis and Butthead.
The phosphorus method, you're not going to have phosphorus unless
because they get it from the Strikers on Matchbooks, according to Breaking Bad.
Yeah. That's possible. They prefer to get something more pure, which is this kind of stuff that you put on diseased horses' hooves and that. And nobody has that hanging around. But yeah, you can... I don't know if you could get it totally about things that are normally around the house. All of the ingredients that are used, any of them individually, could be had innocently.
Yeah. So maybe that's like true. You and two of your neighbors probably accidentally have everything to make meth.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Particularly if your neighbor is a farmer who uses anhydrous ammonia.
Well, there was a guy in my town that was arrested for under terrorism charges because he was growing marijuana and his hobby was making model rockets, and he had the little solid disposable one-use model rocket engines because that's his hobby, and he had marijuana, and they wanted to up the ante. I don't think this held. It shouldn't have held. They probably scared the heck out of him and got him to plea on it, but they charged him on terrorism charges, like said he had bomb-making materials, and it said plain as day in the paper that all he had was model rocket engines. And I think he had a can of gas, too, in his garage for his lawnmower or his snowblower.
And they weren't powerful enough to reach Israel, I would assume.
No. So,
Israel. Yeah, I'm thinking that wouldn't stand up.
Yeah.
That wouldn't stand up. No. You were saying about trying cases. I do. I feel bad about all of the drug cases that I did when I was a prosecutor. At the time, I didn't have the slightest idea that it was wrong. I thought I was doing a good thing. And, once I changed my mind, I got out of the racket. But, that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of people that come down really hard on, the status, the prosecutors, the judges, and that sort of thing. They really are wrong. But when you've been inside and that in your heart, you don't feel evil, right? You can still imagine being in their shoes, and it doesn't do any good. There's a lot of arguments that don't work with prosecutors and judges because they're just not seeing it that way yet.
I'm surprised that they don't get murdered more than they do. And I'm not saying they should, but with people sitting in jail 3, 5, 10, 15 years for things that are non-crimes, doing push-ups and carving Bible verses about vengeance into their arms, I'm really surprised why there isn't more retribution when the people get out. Like in that movie, that's a public defender, but that movie, Cape Fear. Yeah.
More defendants have a grudge against their own lawyer than they do against the prosecutor or the judge that convicted them.
Yeah. Like in Cape Fear. Why is that?
Which is weird. Because they have a relationship with them and feel maybe that they've been betrayed. On the other hand, the prosecutor they don't hold it against the prosecutor or the judge because they're just doing their job. And a whole lot of people, you don't know how many clients I have come to me that are like apologizing to me for breaking the drug laws. Ugh. And I'm going, hold it, man. So you don't have to apologize to me. You haven't done me any harm. And you know, it may not be good for you, but I don't think you should be here. But you are, so we're going to have to deal with it.
Well, you work for the Queen. You answer to the Queen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The Queen, so to speak. Yeah. Anyway, they often have an inverted view of things and blame the prosecutor and the judge far less than you would expect. When I ran for prosecutor, I went door to door, and you would be surprised the number of people who came to the door that had been prosecuted by me, who thanked me, you know, for getting their life straightened out. Talk about wrapping your head around that.
I've heard a lot of that in AA and NA, people who in their shares in the meetings thank the judge who sentenced them to jail for getting them off drugs. And I'm like,
yeah,
come on,
best thing that happened to me. And actually, that's something that when we're talking about a different system and a stateless society, we have to address that because it's real. I mean, those people that say that, they believe it.
I was a intravenous heroin addict, and I got off without getting arrested. I went to an outpatient, an outpatient private, the Haight-Ashbury Detox Clinic, which is privately and publicly funded, but it's not a state institution. And then just went to meetings, and I had a pretty bad habit. And I kicked in the same house I got strung out in, with dealers knocking at my door saying, hey, you haven't called me in 3 weeks, man. Let me give you a free taste. I'm like, no, man.
Well, you were ready at the time, though.
Yeah. And I guess some people die before they get ready, so that's why they end up thanking judges. But I also think that in a stateless society, there wouldn't be the stigma, there wouldn't be the problems, there wouldn't be the adulterants, there wouldn't be the danger. So people would probably just use forever and not die.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
All right, we're talking about Better Call Saul here on the Freedom Fiends. This is an attorney's opinion on Better Call Saul, part 4 or 5 or 6. I can't remember. All right, so we're still on that first season episode. And I do want to point out that Davy Barker told me, and he can't be here tonight because he's in Gitmo or Arizona. I'm not sure which. But he said that the crazy separatist, really kind of cool guy, I liked him, the rich guy that wanted to pay Saul to help him secede, is based on a character from the Illuminatus trilogy by, is that Robert Anton Wilson? I forget. But is also where the name Saul Goodman, there's a lawyer named Saul Goodman in there too. So,
well, you learn something every day.
Yeah. So we covered, we got on a weird twisted tangent about meth production from the viewpoint of a former prosecutor. So anybody out there who's listening going, Oh, I don't like this radio show. They're telling you how to make meth. First of all, we didn't tell you how to make meth. And second of all, Randy was a prosecutor. He worked for the state when he acquired that knowledge. So it's legitimately acquired if you're one of those people. All right. So are we done with this episode, or do we want to move on to the second episode, or do you got more? I do want
to say. Well, I don't know. After they arrested poor Chuck and took him in, and he ended up in the hospital, although they didn't take him to jail because he's in the hospital, and they're talking about getting him committed in that. The episode ends up ending with a couple cops showing up at the door of Mike Ehrmantraut's house. Yep. And he says to him, like, yeah, you're a long way from home, aren't you, or something?
And,
and they say, you and me both. So now you're thinking, what's the deal? Did he run from Philadelphia, you know, or something? Because he was a cop there before. And that was how that one ended. And that was over a week ago. And then there was another one last night.
Yeah,
which was really, really a good one. The first one, the one from a week ago, was mostly pretty
comic,
humorous.
It was comic relief. And, you know, I think that that's why, I think the reason that I love this show and the reason Dobby loves this show, we both mentioned that we had fear, we had concerns that this would not be, that it would just be like a lot of spinoffs, you know? Just trying to monetize the brand further and choke the dead horse and make some more money on it, and not great. Because, and we were happily disappointed in that, because it is great. It's almost as good as Breaking Bad, and it's freestanding. I mean, I think you could actually, I actually recommended to a friend today who has not seen Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad that he watch Better Call Saul before he watched Breaking Bad, because it is the prequel to it. You know, it stands on its own. And the thing is, in Breaking Bad, Saul's role was, you know, was pretty much comic relief. I mean, he did advance the story, but he never really had much depth. And he really does in this show. And we're happy.
Yeah, and he's not just a caricature. They've really turned him into a, you know, a human. Yeah, I mean, a protagonist has to be someone that you care about, even if he's kind of scummy.
That's key right there. That is like the most important aspect of writing for, you know, anything, for literature, for TV, for movies. And I find that when there's a TV show or a movie that I kind of like but kind of don't like, at some point, you know, I start analyzing, like, wow, I should like this, but I don't. What is it I don't like about it? And it's usually that you don't really care about any of the characters. The writers didn't give you a reason to care about any of the characters. And I'll give you a good example of that is that show Halt and Catch Fire about the early computer industry. Have you seen that? I think it's also on AMC. Yeah, I don't care what happens to any of those characters. They're all interesting, but you just really don't care what happens to any of them. So, we'll be back with hour two of the Freedom Fiends talking about Better Call Saul and Mennonites with young Nick. That's going to be near the end of the show, because we don't want to break this up. And Nick was late. He gets benched for most of the show for being late. That is how it works. And I say that with love, but it's a teaching hospital, man. So, Nick, you're all right. You all right, Nick?
I'm here. I'm all right.
You're all right. You've not been contacted by the government?
I have not been contacted by the government.
Excellent. Give me a worms.
Worms.
Hey, there's some Squisklar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibBear 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. My name is Michael Dean. I'm your host. We have some lovely co-hosts tonight here, Mr. Randy England and Mr. Nick Hazelton. Are you there, Randy? Randy's here. Are you here, Nick?
I'm here.
Okay. Now, why aren't you getting to talk until the end of the show?
Because I was late.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not acting like school, because you have to go to school. You don't have to go to the Fiends. So it's my property. I can make the rules. Yeah.
And what was the other reason why Nick, you were having dropouts because of your little sister, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was hogging up the bandwidth.
She'll go to bed soon. Yeah, little sisters.
She went to bed over the break.
Oh, good.
I'm sure you'll come up with some suitable punishment for her.
You need to start watching Better Call Saul, Nick. Why don't you watch Better Call Saul?
I don't know. I heard about it, but I don't watch a whole lot of TV.
Yeah. You had a dropout. Okay, we're going to go talk about Better Call Saul. All right, so it's that rural Oregonian internet. You kind of live in the middle of nowhere, don't you? I'm not making funny. I kind of do too, but
no, yeah, I live in the backwoods.
Yeah,
look who's talking, right?
Yeah, well, I live in the city. Okay. I have neighbors. Nick doesn't have neighbors. I don't think. I've stalked him on Google Earth. I've looked at where he is. All right, so because I sent him something once. All right, so. We're going to talk about the new episode 6 of Better Call Saul, which some people are saying. I saw a review that said it was the best hour of television since one of the better Breaking Bads. And I don't know if it was the best hour of television ever or even near it, but it was the best Better Call Saul, and that's a pretty good thing. This is a spoiler alert. It's about Mike. And I have a... What's it called? A trigger warning, you know, which is like if you're going to talk about something violent that might make someone feel uncomfortable, it's politically correct to give trigger warnings. So if you don't like cops being murdered, you might want to tune out now. We're not killing cops, but there are cop killings in this episode. We're going to talk about it in detail. And I know that can be hard on some people. So, all right, Randy, initial thoughts on this episode.
Well, I agree that this was the best one so far. And like we said, the last episode was kind of comic. This one was totally serious and really, really good.
Mike cries. And, we've never seen Mike cry in, you know, 100 episodes. He was, you know, 30 episodes he was in of Breaking Bad and all the episodes he's been in of Better Call Saul. He seems like someone who would never cry. I mean, this is a guy who like has been shot several times and, you know, like goes to a meeting, just puts a jacket over it and goes to a meeting. You know, he's that kind of guy with a bullet wound. So, and you know, the veterinarian that stitched him up, I had a problem with that guy because while he did offer him some doggy downers, some painkillers, he did not offer him antibiotics. And really, if you're treating a gunshot wound in a back room like
that was weird.
Yeah. Did you notice that too? Did you think, where are the antibiotics?
It was so stupid. I just assumed that he'd already given it to him. Mm.
I like the cone comment though.
Yeah, the cone comment was great. I assume that the thing about the pain medicine was that was the medicine that was actually worth money.
Yeah.
You know, penicillin doesn't sell for 20 bucks.
Yeah,
he
probably gave him the penicillin. Yeah.
Probably did. Let's give him credit for that anyway. He got stitched up and now he's in Albuquerque. We still don't know why, right?
Yeah. His daughter-in-law, I've assumed that woman was his daughter up until now. in Breaking Bad. Like you see her sometimes when he goes to pick up his granddaughter, you know, you see her in the distance. I don't even know if it was the same actress. I don't know if they picked an actress yet who could act for it. They just had a woman standing on the lawn.
Yeah.
But did you assume that that was his daughter in Breaking Bad?
No, I don't think I realized who it was. I wasn't sure. And then finally picked up as he was talking, the way that he acted toward her, I figured that it was not a daughter. It had to be the daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
Just well, because of his relationship with her.
You know, I should have thought about it. I never really put much thought into it, but in Breaking Bad, the granddaughter is mentioned, Kelly Ehrmantraut, because, you know, when they find all the money that Mike has and the police are questioning him and they say that they find, I don't know, it's like a Swiss bank account in, you know, why does this 4-year-old girl, Katie Ehrmantraut, have, you know, $1.8 million in a bank account? What did she do to earn it? And I should have thought of it, you know, with most conventional marriages and naming of children, the granddaughter's name would not be the same last name as his, if that was his daughter, if the mother was his daughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, we can't all catch everything.
But, you know, I was looking at her and I was like, that actress looks really familiar. And I looked her up and my wife thought so too. My wife recognized her from the series Rome. She played some muckety muck in Rome, the show Rome. And I recognized her because she's in Walking Dead. She plays that really weird, creepy woman, the Irish woman that Rick meets out in the woods, who has her zombified husband's head alive. Do you remember that?
Okay, now you're not talking to Davi here now.
Oh, you don't know it. Okay. Anyway.
Nick, but, you know Walking Dead?
Nick?
Did we lose Nick?
I think.
No, I'm here. Sorry, okay. I myself. I don't know Walking Dead.
Well, that's actually good. Good.
Carry the ball there, Michael.
Muting yourself is good if you're not talking for a long time. So that's good radio. But actually, yeah, she's a really, really creepy character. And the actress is Irish, and she's doing an American accent in. She does an Irish accent in Walking Dead, and she does an American accent in Better Call Saul. All right, so. Couple things. I have a legal question and also a couple like really subtle writer jokes I noticed. When Mike goes into the bar in Philly where the two cops are that he later kills, the song playing on the radio before he kills them, shoots them with a hidden 38 special that he hid in the police car by breaking in with a piece of string. Okay. The song. Did you remember the song that was playing in the bar when he was in there talking to the cops? It was the song "Hold On Loosely" by the band 38 Special. That's got to be an intentional little joke there, or foreshadowing.
Sure, yeah.
And some other foreshadowing that's kind of like weird prequel foreshadowing is when Mike closes the bar and the bartender's talking to him, and Mike's talking about moving to Albuquerque. The bartender says, "You know," Mike says, "You ever been?" And he's like, "No. I don't want to go there. They have tarantulas. They're bad news." Or what is it? They're tarantulas. That's a big minus. And do you remember the tarantula scene in Breaking Bad?
Vaguely.
It's when they're out robbing the train of the meth precursor and they've pulled it off and everything's gone perfectly. And then they see that 12-year-old boy on the little scooter bike and Todd shoots him and kills him. When he probably, when there was no reason to, because the kid didn't know what he'd seen. He just saw some people on the desert. The kid drops a jar that he had in his hand, and it's a tarantula, a live tarantula that he found on the desert. So that's a really weird, subtle prequel foreshadowing there.
They do have tarantulas there, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Although, doesn't the train robbery take place in Texas, which is, you know, borders New Mexico? But I think it does. I think it's in West Texas.
Oh, really?
I think
so. Because that's a long way from Albuquerque to Texas.
Yeah, but, you know, it's worth it. They're traveling to get supplies.
Of course, not in Western U.S. miles, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I have a legal question. At some point when Saul shows up in the interrogation room to talk to Mike, after Mike puts down the card and says, he kept saying lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. And then he puts down a card that says, need a will? Call McGill. So then he gets Mike, and Mike comes in, and Mike is proposing this Marx Brothers thing of spilling the coffee. And Saul says he's not going to do that. And he's just going to give him, you know, good representation from a straight up representation from a licensed attorney. Is that an incorrect term, licensed attorney?
Well, no, if you're not licensed, you'd be committing a crime to practice law.
I know the crime is practicing law without a license, but to be an attorney, you have to go to law school and then you have to pass the bar. And that is a form of licensure, but it's not called a licensed attorney, is it?
Well, yeah, because not every state requires you to go to law school, I don't believe.
California does not, of all places.
Yeah, yeah. So the passing the bar and, of course, paying your dues every year after that and doing whatever classes they want you to take keeps your license in force. So, yeah, really, it is the license that lets you practice law. And none of the things, the qualifications, you know, in the years past that got you there, really, none of those will do you any good at all if you don't pay your, you know, your $400 in January, you know?
Yeah. So, although, I don't know, man.
To say licensed, you know, is, I mean, what could you say to add to that? Your license is active in good standing or something, I guess, you know.
I'm out of notes on this episode. I'm sure you have a lot. One thing was I like that it's kind of doesn't need to be said, but Stacy, his daughter-in-law, does understand. Like, at the end, Mike has basically just said, yeah, I killed the guys who killed your husband. And she doesn't have any, like, oh, well, you broke the law. You have to answer for that. She's, you know, probably like, good. Or you know that she accepts it because later, you know, he's still in his granddaughter's life.
Well, yeah, because the thing that she was most interested in was bringing his killer to justice. And in the end, she finds out that Mike was the one that did it.
Yeah, but, you know, there was none of this, like, do you remember in the Rambo movie where he goes to Vietnam and there's like, there's somebody from like the Peace Corps, this couple from the Peace Corps on a boat he's taken down the river, and some marauders jump on the boat and try to take it, and Rambo kills them all, and the husband is like, turns him in, and like basically Rambo just kept the guy's wife from getting gang raped, tortured, and murdered, but the guy turns him in. Which I'm glad that Stacy was not like that.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org. Freedom. So, we were talking during the break. We continued the conversation, as we often do. And Randy was talking about... he's talking about Stacy. And I said, yeah, it's good that she understood that. And he said there are different levels of statism. You want to repeat some of that for the audience?
Oh, you mean people that like Stacy wasn't interested at all in the fact that the law made murder a crime, and so she felt like she did not think that she should call the police. She believed that justice was done. Yeah. At least we think she did.
And it's far
less, she didn't call the police.
It's far less of a clear-cut case. It's not self-defense, it's retribution, whereas the thing in Rambo is absolutely imminent danger self-defense, where pirates are coming onto the boat. And
I would differ on that. I think Mike shot those guys in self-defense.
Because they were going to kill him?
Well, they weren't going to kill him. The guy pointed the gun at him and pulled the trigger, and and each one of those cops had another gun at their side that they would have out in just a moment. So when he pulled the trigger, he tried to release a round at Mike, and only then did Mike shoot after he'd been shot at.
I got to say, too, that
he set him up, but it was self-defense.
Yeah, that's not legally self-defense then. Most situations.
No, he did not. He set up the situation where if they decided to murder him, he would get the drop on them.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have
that
to murder
that him. Probably wouldn't work in a court of law, too, especially since they're cops and he's an ex-cop. But,
well, that part, yeah.
I got to say, too, if I were in a self-defense scenario and I fired a gun and it did not fire, I wouldn't just go, I would be racking it, seeing if it has a, you know, a stovepipe round or something. Like you learn in the movie, in the documentary or the how-to video I made with Jared Waltz, gun training for the non-aggression principle. It tells you how to clear malfunctions in emergency situations. And that would be my first instinct, would be to rack the thing manually and try to clear the round and fire again. But
I think the cop knew that he'd been had, and there were no more rounds in that gun.
But he had another gun on his hip.
Yeah,
I mean, and he was trying to kill Mike with his own gun to make it, you know, so it wouldn't be traceable.
They
to him.
Tried, but they weren't quick enough. Mike already had his gun out. It was going to happen.
I also wonder why Mike shot him in the vest the first time. You know, he shot the other guy in the head, but he shot the first guy in the vest, in the chest, knowing he's a cop and he's probably wearing a vest. And, you know, if
this was after a night of drinking, right?
Yeah, but you know what? He was pretending to get drunk. He wasn't drunk. I watched that whole episode twice. I liked it so much. He was sipping drinks and looking like he was pounding drinks the whole night.
Oh, I was talking about the cops, but you're right. They were on duty, weren't they?
Yeah, but they were still at a cop bar drinking. But, yeah, it's Philly. It's Philly, man, you know.
One thing is definitely for sure, even if it was self-defense, the administering the coup de grace at the end was not self-defense.
Yeah.
When he finished the guy.
I liked how Mike tricked them into getting him to a remote location where he could carry this plan out. Because when he was in the cop car, and I knew before I saw it, like I couldn't figure out what he'd done in the car, you know, when he broke in. And then when I realized what was up, I'm like, oh, he's hidden a gun in the back seat somewhere because he knows they're going to take his gun. And I was thinking, like, why did he taunt them in the bar? And then why did he taunt them in the back seat when, you know, the logical thing to do probably, or what I would have thought was the logical thing to do would be to not taunt them, not let them know what's going on, hide the gun in the car, try to get a ride home from him, and then shoot him from the back seat in the back of the head. But he'd be locked in the back of the car then. Although I think he could figure out a way to get out, you know, because he's a cop and he knows.
Yeah, but I don't think he wanted to just outright murder them.
He wanted with them.
He was going to, not toy with them.
Let him
but
know.
But if they hadn't tried to kill him, I'm not so sure that he would have done anything to them. See, he only suspected that they did it. And
proved that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was his test.
It was his test, and it was also a way to get them to take him to somewhere really remote. Because, you know, he couldn't get away with shooting them downtown or near the bar or anywhere that's populated. Someone might see it.
Needed them to take him to a place where they could kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did.
Yeah. Man, he is a tough mofo to get shot, get on a train, and then get stitched up on the other end of the cross-country train ride.
Yeah, and that's a full 2-day, 3-day.
Yeah, it's two-thirds. It's more than two-thirds of the way across America. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
I didn't forget.
What? Is this thing on? Hello? I'd like to dial Murray Hill 3412, please. So the Mennonites have been put off until the last segment. We've got some singing Mennonites who are going to come in and sing hymns in harmony. No, in unison, because it's plain. And then they're going to teach us how to make jam on delicious dish on the Freedom Fiends. All right, so we're talking about something that's not Better Call Saul. I think we're done with that. Randy, you want to talk about, I'm going to throw this to Randy because the email he sent me has not gotten through yet because the Wyoming internets are powered by antelopes running on treadmills and it takes a while. Okay, I got it. Go ahead and tell me about this case. You're in Missouri. There's a case in Missouri. The lawmakers there are considering passing a single law to help one person, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, one guy. There's this fellow who back in about 1994 was convicted of distribution or attempting to distribute or possessing with intent to distribute marijuana. And he had been convicted twice before of not distributing but just possession. He had two prior felony possessions, I think, of marijuana. Yep. And so this was a third time. And back in the 80s, it was really big, these three strikes and you're outlaws.
Ronald Reagan. Thank you, Ronald Reagan. The lover of
liberty. We got one of those in the state of Missouri. And possessing with intent to distribute drugs in the state of Missouri is a Class B felony, which is pretty high up. It's like 5 to 15 years. But if you're a prior drug offender, it kicks up to the punishment for an A felony. Now, an A felony is as high as it gets. Like murder is an A felony. And they go even one worse. If you have two prior drug offenses, well, then you can have punishment for an A felony and it must be served without probation or parole. And that can be very harsh.
That'll teach them.
Particularly when you've got the hanginest judge in the whole state of Missouri.
In the whole hanging state of Missouri, yeah.
No, the hangingest judge.
I said the hangingest judge in the hanging state of Missouri.
No, we're not Texas, okay? Let's go, right. You know, it's not quite as bad, but this is really
bad. You know
what
I heard? I heard, I won't believe that corporations are people until the state of Texas executes one.
That all would right. not be a pretty
go on, man. I have a theory. Well, I have a theory about the war on drugs that I want to interject really quick. I think the reason, would you say that the war on drugs is the people waging it, would you say they're mean about it?
I think they're all kinds of people. Some of them think that they're doing the work of the angels, and some of them are nasty, nasty, nasty lying jerks.
Yeah, and even the ones that think they're doing the work of the angels are often doing mean things. So I think the whole thing is pretty mean. I mean, that's an understatement. You know, I mean, it's beyond mean. Yeah. Kidnapping, murdering, and you know, messing up people's lives is very mean. But I think the reason they're mean is because they can't wrap their head around the thought that it's not working. They can't wrap their head around the thought that threatening someone with life imprisonment for their third pot charge would they think in their mind it should make nobody smoke pot. They think that it's going to make everyone be good. And they think that it's good to not smoke pot. And they can't wrap their head around the fact that laws don't deter things, especially nanny laws where there's no victim, do not deter things. And the free market will flourish regardless of what they scribble down, regardless of how many people they kill. People are going to do what they're going to do. And I think the fact that they can't wrap their head around the fact that they're losing this war I think that's what makes them so mean. I really do. What do you think?
I guess that it's frustrating. It's frustrating. The worst thing about this three strikes law is that you have an A felony where the punishment can be anywhere from 10 years to life. Now, what if you read that? Well, I don't know. You read that article a while back, I think, didn't you?
Yeah.
It says that there's only one prisoner.
Repeat it.
Well, there's one prisoner in the entire state of Missouri who is serving a life without probation or parole for marijuana possession with intent to distribute. Only one guy. What that means, and this is only since those laws came in the 80s, there's only been one judge in this whole state who apparently was willing to give somebody a life sentence without parole, and that was this guy. And so there have been a lot of people that were sentenced under this law, but apparently their judges gave them 10 years or 12 years or something less than life. But this judge gave this guy life in prison, and now he's kind of a cause célèbre. And there is a bill in our legislature just for this one lone guy, and the way that the bill is drafted literally says, if there's anybody in the prison system right now serving a life sentence without parole and only been convicted of marijuana offenses, then they get out. And that's just for this one.
Now, is it only
one of the reasons?
Is it only for right now, or if another judge tomorrow sentenced somebody for their third strike to the same life imprisonment, would it get them out?
If it was tomorrow, it would get them out, because this one says anyone who's incarcerated on August 28th of this year.
Really?
Yeah. So it's tailor-made just for one guy. Now, here's one good thing that's important. We have some changes in our criminal law that are a bunch of them, blanket changes that are coming in 2017, and it gets rid of this life without serving life without probation or parole. So this will be gone off the books in the state of Missouri in a couple of years.
Yeah, but what about, so if this law passes and this guy gets out of prison, what happens if some crazy judge sentences somebody else between now and 2017? Do they have to write another law for that person? Or would there be some kind of, lawyers could argue that there's a precedent, or how would that work?
Well, that's kind of interesting, because if I had a client that was getting ready to be sentenced for this offense, I would go in and ask for life without parole for my client, as long as he would get into the Department of Corrections before August 28th.
Well, if you're sure the law is going to pass, it's not passed yet.
No, if they did pass the law.
Does something have to be appealed to be precedent, or can case law work as precedent without being an appeal?
No, the case decisions that the trial judges write for the parties in a case do not end up in the public case database, so they don't have any precedential value. In federal court, they have some value, but in state court, they have none. So if you have a decision in Cole County, Missouri, from a certain judge, yeah, that decision is probably going to hold if you get another case with that particular judge, but that's about as far as it goes.
Do you practice law in the federal courts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Federal and state. Is that the federal bar? What do you have to be? What's it called?
The federal bar, if you have to be a member of the state bar that you're in.
Licensed attorney.
Licensed attorney.
Licensed criminal attorney.
And then you have to have a couple attorneys who have been practicing in federal court for 5 years or more vouch for you and say, hey, let this guy in, he's okay, you know. And you have to pay some dues every year. They're not very high. And I can see why they're not.
To the queen. You pay it to the queen, right?
Most of the lawyers around here do not want to belong to the federal bar, because most of them learn their jobs, learn how things are done in state court, and the federal court is different.
Yeah.
It's just very different and sometimes not comfortable, because you don't know what you're doing, you know, at least when you first get there. Well, I won't speak for everybody. I'll speak for me. I had no idea what I was doing when I first started.
So what's the word on the law streets in Missouri? How are attorneys, what are they saying about this bill?
You know, there isn't much talk about it, but I haven't seen anybody thought it was fair that anyone should be in prison for life for marijuana.
Even people who think marijuana should be illegal?
Yeah, they think that this is a little harsh. I think most people do. Well, yeah, no, they think it's a little harsh.
I know.
Harsh.
I'm laughing.
I think it's way harsher.
I'm laughing at them. I'm laughing at the statism.
I think it's harsh to be in jail for 5 days for marijuana, let alone. Yeah.
Well, I think crystal meth should be freely available in vending machines as long as they're privately owned and operated, right next to the assault rifle vending machines. And an assault rifle is an actual designation, unlike assault weapon, which is made up political gobbledygook.
Are they different from one another?
Assault weapon is not a designation of a particular type of weapon. It's a politically charged term made up by gun grabbers. It is written in some laws. I mean, there was the assault weapons ban. It was federal for 10 years. But the definition of assault weapon varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and is often used by people who don't know anything about guns and say that, you know, a barrel shroud is the shoulder thing that goes up. An assault rifle is a absolute designation. It's an intermediate cartridge switch fireable weapon. You know, an AK-47, an M4, you know, anything that's not a full 30 round, you know, big battle rifle type cartridge, like a 30-06 or 308, you know, something like a 7.62x39 or a 223, that is switchable from single shot to at least burst fire. Sometimes they have a third for full auto.
Does it make any difference if they have cop killer bullets?
Yeah, that's a made up designation too. And I do want to say that's some breaking news, is that the feds that were going to outlaw a particular type of 223 bullet unconstitutionally by fiat, changed their mind. Did you hear about this?
No.
Yeah. And I don't think it really, I think the attempt to ban them was a trial balloon. I think it was an attempt to gauge the reaction, to see what they could do down the line later.
Decided they couldn't do it.
I'm not saying they didn't have the intent to do it, but just threatening to do it was just to gauge the reaction, or if they'd done it, it was to gauge the reaction. It was to see if people really have the teeth that they say of, when they ban them, when they cross this line in the sand, you'll get my bullets one at a time at you, you know, that kind of stuff. They wanted to see if anybody would actually do it, and nobody did it. So yeah, they'll ban guns.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. So, I just got over being sick, and I'm kind of losing my voice, so I'm going to let Randy interview Nick about Mennonites. Because Nick's from a family of Mennonites, although I think he's not one himself, but you guys can talk about that.
Yeah, Nick. Yep. The thing that, you mentioned earlier that your family was Mennonite, and I had a question. I guess this is my fault that Michael left this on you. But my favorite little stores to visit around where I live here in Missouri are the Mennonite, they call them like a Dutch bakery or a Dutch pantry or something like that. Stores that have just so much fantastic stuff. They have every kind of spice in the world and 50 different kinds of flour in there, flour to bake stuff, you know, that sort of thing. Really great stores. But we have a lot of Mennonites in Missouri. We have a lot of Amish in Missouri. And Amish, you never see them here with a business. They have farms. They're mostly farmers, but They don't sell their wares out of stores, and they don't even, you go to the place with the Amish furniture. Turns out that, yeah, the Amish made the furniture, but the guy who's selling it isn't an Amish. Maybe he's a Mennonite. I don't know. But do you know, are there different rules that, you know, would make, say, Amish people more strict? I know there's some relationship between the two, but I do understand that the groups are different, distinct from one another.
Yeah, there are a lot of different kinds of Mennonites. I believe Amish are a type of Mennonites. They broke off way back in history from the actual Mennonite church, but they all have different varying degrees of how much they recognize technology and how much they deal with people. I don't know the exact theological justification and beliefs of why they have differing beliefs on technology, but they definitely do differ quite a bit.
But so the Amish, the original group that started up were called themselves Mennonites, and the Amish broke off from them?
I believe it was something like that. The Amish might have broken off a little bit before they started being called actual Mennonites, but I believe it was really early on in that movement.
Okay, so is there, you know, when I was mentioning different levels of strictness, something that occurred to me was that in my interactions with Amish and that, and back when I was a prosecutor, one of the things that would bring the Amish into town would be, well, they would come and shop for some things and that, but also every once in a while, people would go out and burn down a barn or push an outhouse over a cliff or something. And, you know, they'd catch the guy that did it, and then the Amish would come in, and, you know, if they had to come to court, they would come to court. So I ended up meeting a lot of those people, and they never seemed to, I mean, they were very, very low tech, like in that movie Witness. I mean, that was the way that it was. They didn't have electricity in their farms, and mostly didn't have phones, I don't think. And of course, they rode around in the buggies with the little red triangle on the back of it, who, if you came over a hill going too fast, you really have to hit the brakes, you know, to avoid hitting them. And they were very, you know, very strict about that, or it seemed to me from my point of view. But the Mennonite people that I see, although there's some similarities of dress in that, seem to be more comfortable with using technology. So, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe that's why the Mennonites have the stores and that, because you go in there and sure, you can open up a refrigerated, you know, cabinet and get some cider out of it or something like that. You know, is there anything like that from what you've seen? I mean, if your family that you're from, your folks or whatever other family members are Mennonite, how far do those regulations go?
Well, my family actually, my parents converted to Mennonite, so I don't know exactly how far it goes back, but they definitely are allowed to use electricity and stuff, the Mennonites are, and I don't actually know any Amish people, so I don't know exactly what.
Isn't Ben Stone Amish? No, I'm kidding. All right, it's been a good show, guys.
He's a Quaker.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Randy.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Have a good night, Nick. Yep. Good night.
Night.
Tune in tomorrow. It's going to be Davi and Dan Green from Glasgow, Scotland.
Scotland, huh?
And the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.